This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. This month marks 35 years since the Americans with Disabilities Act was signed into law. Joining me now to talk about accessibility successes and challenges that remain are accessibility advocate and former Cincinnati City Council member Kevin Flynn, Cincinnati Accessibility Board of Advisors Chair Jill Gibney, and Disability Rights, Education, and Defense Fund Legal Director Claudia Center. Thank you all so much for being here today.
Thank you, Lucy.
Great to be here.
Jill, you and I talked about the ADA a few years ago, and at the time, something you said really stuck out to me. You said the ADA is the floor and not the ceiling. Do you still feel that way? Explain what you mean by that.
Absolutely. There have been a lot of remarkable changes since the ADA passed 35 years ago. I'll start with a cultural shift. So it's more understood as a matter of rights and identity and not just charity or tragedy. Physical access has improved, obviously, with event of ramps and curb cuts and things like this. I'd say there's greater visibility of representation of people with disabilities in workplace, media, public sectors. But the ceiling, what hasn't changed? That's the part that is there's still an employment gap. There's still a housing gap. There's still some transportation barriers, particularly in more rural areas. Other parts of existing. Every time I'm reminded of how it's still not the ceiling every time I go to the gym, where people want to come up and say, I think it's awesome that you're here when I'm just trying to get a workout in like you are.
Yeah, yeah. Right. You don't need the commentary.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and Jill, you're a lower limb amputee. You've also been diagnosed with MS.
Yes.
And you're a lot younger than I am. Do you remember life before the ADA? Are there changes that really stick out in your mind?
I remember, I actually remember it happening on the news and kind of asking my parents what it meant. And they were really, with sort of a limited understanding because nobody actually knew what it meant when it was passing. But it was they just knew that my life would be start to get easier than it had, access to things. And at the time I was, I think I had just moved to the Cincinnati area and, it was coming from a pretty rural place before. And, I don't know, it was sort of this, let's see what happens. Let's wait and see. But, hilariously, it was, shortly after that I had to switch high schools because there wasn't an elevator in my high school in order for me to finish high school because I had to have surgery. So it was a weird thing where it was just slow changes over time.
Yeah.
And things started to become more noticeable and easier to navigate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kevin, you started using a wheelchair after being injured in a car wreck. Once you were using a chair, what stuck out to you in terms of accessibility or lack of accessibility in Greater Cincinnati?
I think that I noticed a lot more things that weren't accessible. I also noticed other people saying, oh, yes, this facility is completely accessible, only to show up and not be able to get in. Mm-hmm. That's one of the really big problems that we're still facing 35 years later. Mm-hmm. As you said, or as Jill said, the ADA is the floor. It literally says that in the law. These are the minimum requirements that everyone is supposed to follow. And yet our government doesn't follow them. Private businesses don't follow them. And the only real enforcement is by complaint, sometimes to the point of a private lawsuit.
Mm-hmm. And you've been active in making some of that happen here locally, I know.
I've tried.
Yeah, yeah. Claudia, we talked about the ADA has been around for 35 years now, but just because it's the law, are people and corporations following the law the way it's intended?
Well, I think we're all enormously proud of the work that the disability community and our supporters did in getting the ADA passed and before that Section 504. You can watch some of that history by watching Change Not Charity documentary that's streaming free on PBS that talks about the history of the ADA. But I agree with Kevin that it's a constant struggle to try to get entities to follow those minimum requirements that, you know, really should be the floor. Yeah, so I completely agree.
Yeah. We're talking about accessibility successes and the challenges that remain for people with disabilities. Do you have an accessibility experience that you'd like to share with us? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Claudia, you mentioned Section 504, and I do want to talk about that in a couple minutes, but the Trump administration has issued executive orders rescinding diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. Do you think that will affect people with disabilities, or, and if so, how?
Oh, absolutely. It's a bit odd right now to be celebrating the 35th anniversary of the ADA when there's been so many terrible adverse actions taken in the past few months against the disability community, starting initially or primarily with the devastating cuts to Medicaid, which is the primary funder of disability services across the country. Medicaid is the reason that people with disabilities live in the community with supports instead of institutions. And so it's really a struggle to celebrate our victory in passing the ADA at this time in history. And that's only one example. The Medicaid, there's also rollbacks of regulations, there's terrible rhetoric. It's just a really hard time, and we're going to fight together as a community, as we always have, but it's really a challenging time.
Jill or Kevin, do you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, just, you know, I pulled up one of the executive orders that was signed by President Trump on January 20th. And everybody talks about that it was against diversity, equity, and inclusion, and it was. And that was horrible in and of itself. But the actual order talks about diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility. It's in the actual order. Mm-hmm. That they're going to be rolling these things back. And the New York Times had an article in early March of compiling the various departments' regulations where they were eliminating words from the regulations. And one of the words that they were eliminating was access and accessibility. Mm-hmm. And you've got the Americans with Disabilities Act, which is replete. And the regulations implementing the ADA are much more voluminous and much more specific. You can't describe something without using those words.
Mm-hmm. Jill, what was your thought when you? Yeah, I mean, you said accessibility at the same time. Kevin did. You were very aware of that.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, obviously. Social media is rampant, and a lot of conversations are happening on social media. And what I was finding to be true constantly on social media, on conversations around DEI, when I would mention the fact that I'm an amputee, they were like, well, that doesn't include you. And I was like, it most certainly does. And it was, you know, it's just like this thing of like trying to educate people that I was like, you're taking away. You're saying that, you know, the removal of DEI is something good, but DEI serves people with pregnancies and veterans and other people that they didn't intend to lump into that category, right? It's just about, oh, this other group or this other group, but it includes all people with all kinds of barriers and all kinds of like kind of othering. If you're kind of considered an other, that's what DEI is for, right? Mm. And the language to say like the fourth part that is always silent is accessibility is like a common, like we all know this, right? It's just that do people, able-bodied people understand that? And I found that to be not true. Yeah.
Claudia, Jill raised this point before about income disparities for people with disabilities. And in the United States, it's still legal to pay people with disabilities less than minimum wage if the disability is determined to reduce the ability to do the job somehow. What are the implications of that, Claudia? What kind of effect does that have on people?
Well, I think it shows the attitudes of our governments toward people with disabilities, that they would permit disabled people to be paid less than minimum wage. The last administration took steps to eliminate that permission, but now this administration is trying to allow that rule to keep going. So it's very it's a long struggle.
Well, the National Disability Institute found adults with disabilities live in poverty at twice the rate of adults without disabilities. I mean, Kevin, that whole pay issue has to be a big factor in that.
The pay issue is part of it. So many in the disability community have been discouraged from even seeking jobs. So the statistics are actually a lot worse than what appears, because when you talk about unemployment, the single largest group of unemployed are persons with disabilities. Mm-hmm. And that's only a small segment, because the others have been discouraged to even get into the workforce. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have a job, you can't have good housing. The housing depends upon good public transportation, because a lot of people with disabilities can't drive. So it all has to work together. And as was indicated earlier, a lot of people that have disabilities are using governmental assistance to live outside of a nursing home. Well, most of that government-assisted housing was built before 1978. So there's a lack of
accessibility.
Any kind of accessibility. So there'll be steps. There won't be an elevator.
Yeah.
The doorways won't be wide enough. So and even new construction, it's only 5% of the units, because it falls under something else under the FHA, but only 5% of the units need to be accessible. That would be fine if the vast majority of the units were also 5% accessible, but they're not.
We got an email from Holly, who writes, "Taking someone to lunch today at a restaurant she likes, but their entry has no door opener. She wouldn't be able to enter without someone else to hold the door. It's not an old building. This is a chain with enough money to install door openers at their multiple locations." Jill, you know, I mentioned that you're chair of the Cincinnati Accessibility Board of Advisors. Yeah. Are these the kinds of things that you hear all the time?
Oh, yeah. I mean, typically on the Cincinnati Accessibility Board of Advisors, we deal with things within the city limits, like just to kind of remove barriers for people so that public spaces can be used by everybody and not just a certain few. When it comes to, I'm not sure where Holly is writing from, but or what restaurant it is, but there are a lot of buildings, especially once you get to the suburbs, that don't really have a lot of features that serve everybody, that are like universal, right? Yes, we do hear about things like that, but typically it's going to be things more like entry to a building in OTR or Northside or some other urban neighborhood that has, you know, kind of an older set of buildings, and how do we make those more accessible and more you know, kind of so that everybody can enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
We've recently also started doing some like good work with the park system, which is really awesome with Cincinnati Parks. We've, you know, like events, making events in the city center more accessible for everybody. But yeah, I tell Holly that I empathize greatly. There's a lot of buildings that are kind of like that, that I'm sure Kevin has a more compelling experience with than I do. Because what happens with me is that someone will almost like break their leg to run to open the door for me as a gesture that's mm-hmm. like really like, ta-da, mm-hmm. Which is nice, but they wouldn't do that for you, and they probably wouldn't do that for Kevin. Yeah, so it's just like, it's an interesting experience to just like walk the world like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to continue our conversation after a short break, and later in the program, we'll have experts here to answer your DIY home improvement questions. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about accessibility for people with disabilities, the progress we've made in Greater Cincinnati, and the challenges that remain. My guests are Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund Legal Director Claudia Center, Accessibility Advocate and former Cincinnati City Council member Kevin Flynn, and Cincinnati Accessibility Board of Advisors Chair Jill Gibney. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Kevin, before our break, we got an email from Holly who was talking about a restaurant that doesn't have a door opener. Those are obviously very important for people who use wheelchairs, but I think a lot of us use them if your arms are filled with groceries. There are lots of people who make use of those. Did you want to comment on that?
Well, just the ADA actually does not require door openers.
Really?
On doors, right.
I did not know that.
That's the floor, not the ceiling.
So there are certain requirements as to doors, but that's not one of them. But again, if you just rely on the ADA, that's the federal law. Very difficult to get people to pay attention to one little restaurant if it's a federal case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or the U.S. Department of Justice, which has cut back on its entire civil rights division, but especially relative to the ADA enforcement. Mm. So the state law also has in their building code a lot of those regulations that I was talking about at the federal level. And then when I was on city council, we put in a provision that any entity that's getting any kind of city enhancement, whether it be a tax abatement or a zone change or any kind of enhancement by the city, they have to at least have a door that's accessible. And if that door's not the main entrance, then there has to be prominent signage that tells you where you can get in easily.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, just this year, there was a building that had been taken down to the girders. And the city actually paid the company to rebuild the sidewalks that are 20 foot wide downtown. And they rebuilt the place with one step to get in the main entrance. And there was no signage directing anybody to another door. And even when there is another door, half the time it's locked. So it is a constant struggle just to get what you would think would be common sense. And before I was actually involved in the public sector, I used to approach restaurants like, you know, I'm a pretty good tipper. And if they don't want me in here, there's plenty of other places I can go. Now I feel a responsibility for others that do want to go. We've talked about Nippert Stadium, and they did their $87 million renovation, and they were short over 100 wheelchair spaces and companion seats. Mm-hmm. And they had no wheelchair spaces in the student section. For a university that has over 45,000 students, I guarantee you there are students that need the wheelchair spaces.
Yeah.
That was a 5-year battle to get that changed.
Mm-hmm. Did you want to weigh in, Jill?
Just to piggyback, and I think that this is something that is like probably needs to be said, is that, you know, like we, you know, in this conversation of celebrating the ADA without acknowledging that compliance has never been enough, access means like, can Kevin and I go into the restaurant? Equity is the goal, because can we get in the same way? The same, you know, even though we have a difference in disability and the difference in how we present to the world, how do each of us get into that place successfully and independently? And I think independently is like a critical part, because independent, to the ability to do something independently is how I ended up on the board to begin with. I watched a woman trying to navigate a very big public event on, she had every right to do that on her own, but she was kind of buried in a crowd. And she was like, I don't think anyone can see me. And she was in a wheelchair, and it was like, you know, trying to move people out of the way. Yep. And it was, so it wasn't, it didn't have to happen to me. It happened to someone else. But I also had my own lens of understanding that being on the board has actually expanded immensely. And like, it's never, we're never aiming for perfection, and we're never going to get it perfect. But just to move the needle every so often and have that kind of commitment to doing so is really the, all we're asking for. Yeah.
Claudia, before our break, you mentioned Section 504. There's a lawsuit that 17 attorneys general have filed to prevent the inclusion of gender dysphoria in the definition of disability in the Federal Rehabilitation Act. That you referenced 504. Some people might notice that. Some disability advocates and legal experts say that lawsuit could put other protections at risk, that it goes beyond this issue surrounding gender dysphoria. Are you familiar with that? Can you tell us a little bit more about that lawsuit and what you think might be at stake there?
Sure. So that lawsuit was filed. It challenged a passage in the preamble to the HHS 504 regulations about gender dysphoria, but it also challenges the entire set of regulations implementing Section 504, as well as originally the constitutionality of Section 504 itself. And so we've had a campaign where hundreds of people have called their state attorneys general, probably thousands, to say, please don't challenge 504. That's a central law for the inclusion of disabled people in our societies. And so after, at this time, the 17 states have dropped their constitutional challenge to Section 504, but they are still challenging the entire set of regulations, and we're watching that case closely.
Before we have to end this conversation, I do want to talk about successes there, because there have been some locally. Butler County Metro Parks has the county's first use of universal changing table that they're unveiling this week. Butler County also was the first tourist destination in Ohio to be verified accessible by the website Wheel of the World. Jill, are there any successes that come to mind for you when you're trying to think of that? Kind of some bright spots in the
accessibility. Absolutely, yeah. I will say that, you know, just via the board, I've been able to participate in the planning and execution of some events around the city. Namely, I will say, like, Cincinnati Pride actually consulted with CAVA to say, like, how do we organize and get this information out to the public. They already had a bunch of things in place for accessibility, which was wonderful. Also, I will say that, like, this past Blink was amazing, because they actually brought in an ADA coordinator to be the boots on the ground person to create viewing areas that were separate and easier for people in wheelchairs to view, and pathways where people didn't have to fight a crowd in the street. I will say that every event that I've been to most recently, the Refresh bus has showed up to almost all of them. So people are actually thinking, oh yeah, we should get that bus to be a part of this event that we're doing. So it's cool to see able-bodied people in the city just being like, oh yeah, we should bring this along too. And I will say that that part has been an absolute joy to watch. It makes me feel proud of my city, and it makes me feel proud of the service that I'm, you know, it makes me feel like the service isn't being lost on anybody, which is good.
Well, we have this email I want to read very quickly. Bree emails, thank you to my friends for lifting the true experiences and obstacles we face. I'm so proud of the work we do on CABA and elsewhere, but it will only ever reach so far as long as we fail to get the private sector on board. The significant amount of benefits they would experience if they prioritized accessibility would more than outweigh what they see as a burden. Well, this has been a great conversation. I've been talking with Cincinnati Accessibility Board of Advisors Chair Jill Gibney, Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund Legal Director Claudia Center, and accessibility advocate and former Cincinnati City Council member Kevin Flynn. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thanks, Lucy.
Thank you, Lucy.
Thank you.
Up next, do you have a home improvement project you're itching to do yourself? We have experts here to answer your questions. This is Cincinnati Edition.